Welcome to the Digicom Cafe, located at the intersection of faith and technology. We hope you enjoy your cafe experience where we cater to your digital and spiritual appetites, and build interest in the amateur radio hobby, one story at a time. Please stand by as we get ready to launch this episode of Radio on the Rocks. You are about to listen to a Radio on the Rocks Cafe Cast interview, which occurred on June 11, 2019, in the Digicom Cafe Multimode Communications Network, with Danny J, KD5DLJ, and guest and one of the hosts of Ham Nation, Valerie Hotzfeld, NV9L of Crescent City, Illinois.
Hello, NV9L in the room.
NV9L, KD5DLJ, good morning, Val, how are you?
I'm doing really good, Denny. How's it going?
Well, we are experiencing an absolutely gorgeous day here in the Ozarks of Northwest Arkansas. Now, you're an extra class amateur, I see. And I was noticing on your QRZ page that you also were nominated Amateur Radio Operator of the Year at Hamvention last year.
Yep, I've been an extra class. You know, I got my extra class real early on because everybody said, just keep going. So I got my tech in 06 and general in 09 and tech in 2010 because I know the older you get, the harder it is to learn stuff. If I had to take that test now, I'm sure I'd flunk it. But I'm so glad I got that out of the way. And it was no code, but I ended up taking classes with CW Ops but so I could learn code. But yeah, I won Ham of the Year last year. That was pretty exciting. But I no longer have the throne. Someone new took it over this May, so that was pretty exciting to do that. I never even expected that, so pretty cool to have that under my belt.
Well, congratulations. So why don't you tell us your story? You know, it's good to hear a female voice in amateur radio, and I'm kind of curious to know how it is that you got into ham radio. Go ahead and tell us. What's your story?
Well, I got in on a fluke. Basically, I worked for a video game company. They designed video games like Golden Tee Golf and things like that. And I'm an accountant. And when things were slow, I'd go down and help out the guys in tech support. A couple of guys said, hey, it might be nice to get our ham license. None of them knew a ham. I didn't know any hams. And I couldn't go with them that weekend, so I could go a different weekend. So I talked my daughter into going with me, and we went and we got our ham ticket. And then I was fortunate. I lived in Wisconsin, even though I worked in Arlington Heights, Illinois, but I had some very active repeaters in Wisconsin who really pulled me in and made me do a net control within my first week of getting my license. And I ended up being treasurer and different roles in the club. So I ended up being very active in the hobby on 2 meters anyway. And then that's when everybody said, keep going for your license. So they had this Miller Valley Brewing Company on their property. Once a week on Tuesday nights, they would have the Miller Valley Radio Club, and they would have a technical group once a week. And so I went to that, and it was most of the guys, the average age there was probably 70 years old, and all men. And boy, they helped me pass my test, man. They helped me if I come in with questions that I had in the book, and they put it up on the chalkboard, and I'd learn it and master it and practiced tests and stuff until I got my extra. So here I was with an extra, but still hanging out on 2 meters. So I finally saved up and got a cheap 706 Mark IIG. And I had some speaker wire laying around. I made a loop sky wire out of my free antenna book, and I was on the air on HF. But I didn't have any HF friends or anything, so I kind of had to learn HF the hard way, you know. So I had no Elmers, and I made some definite lid moves when I started off, but since then, you know, I was in a contest and I met who is now my husband, Jerry Rosalia. So he's helped me a lot now, but yeah, it was school of hard knocks for me when I first started out, that's for sure.
But I see you're also into de-expeditions. That's pretty exciting. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm into them in the fact that I'd love to go on one. I've only been to Saba, PJ6. I went there for a contest, and we broke the world record, and it's still a world record today. So it's number one world record I got with a team of 4 others, and I had a great time. But Jerry, my husband, goes on them all the time. So Usually end up being a de-expedition pilot for some of these de-expeditions. And basically, for those who don't know what a pilot is you're like the communication hub back and forth between the team and the ham. So you let the team know what's going on over there, because usually they only have communications with ham. So you kind of give them weather reports and things like that. And then they let me know, say the 160 antenna's down, so I can let everybody know what's going on with the team. So one of these days, yeah, I'd hope to go on a Tenton Jenner D expedition myself. But usually I'm just part of the team from here in the States. So that's the extent of my de-expedition experience.
Well, it sounds like that goes along with your accounting background. You're a detailed person and very necessary in some of those activities. I also noticed on your QRZ page that you were part of the Force of 50, which we all read about and followed, and I'm sure that was rewarding. You might comment on that experience and how proud you were to have amateur radio as the basis for being involved in that.
Yeah, well, what led to that is I started off dispatching on Zello during Hurricane Harvey for small animal rescues. And there weren't enough rescuers, and by the time they'd get to the dogs had already drowned. And I'm listening to this, and I couldn't just sit back in my cushy air-conditioned shack and deal with it. So me and my son went down to Beaumont, Texas, and we helped with small animal rescue. And so that was on my heels when they were looking for somebody to go to Puerto Rico. And so I'm so glad I got chosen. But I had the cushy detail, I guess, from there, because I was assigned to the EOC, which was in the San Juan Convention Center. So I had an air condition with a cot, and they even had Terry set up showers. I had running water. So I really had the cushy job. I slept on the first floor, and then two of us assigned there. We worked probably 12-hour days up top on the third floor. So I kind of never really left the building except on my day off. So I was mostly dealing with net control and all the guys out in the field. If they needed, say they were assigned at a hospital and the hospital needed oxygen tanks or something like that, we'd go find the correct table to get them the diesel fuel or whatever they needed at their hospital, because we were the only communications. We were the only communications on that entire island that had a network. So everybody was coming to us too. I mean, we had the FCC, the FBI, the Secret Service, the VA, the National Guard, military police. I mean, we were the only ones with communications. So, and it was kind of funny because when we first got there, you know, the Red Cross had gave us a closet basically to set up net control. And then a bunch of us went over to the EOC command center, and they wouldn't let us in. So we had to kind of wait out there, like, you know, waiting backstage at a rock concert to get backstage to try and find somebody we knew to give us a guest pass. And then we had to go in and sell ourselves on what services we offered till we could finally get our own table and IDs to get into the building. So, and then once we got in the building, they realized how valuable we were. And so I think next disaster come time, FEMA will have no problem bringing hams in. And but it was funny. It took us 3 days to get a table inside the emergency operation centers.
Wow, very interesting. Well, knowing your other passions, I would suspect that was kind of a disappointment to be stuck in the air conditioning. Sounds like you enjoy camping, fishing, hiking, and all that kind of stuff. I would imagine you're probably hoping you could get out there in the wild backwoods of Puerto Rico and help out too, maybe, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they put me where they put me. I had to do all the reports. I had to do all the spreadsheets on where our guys were and what types of communication they had. And so I'm I'm good with meetings and all that, you know, so that I'm that kind of person. So I can understand why they put me there. I was also in charge of PR, but it was really hard. I brought my own satellite phone that we have, and I was supposed to do an interview with CNN, but we couldn't get through because the satellite phones were overtaxed because FEMA passed out satellite phones to everybody, but it just overwhelmed the system. On my day off, every 10 days, the Red Cross requires you to take a day off. So I said, I want to help you deliver radios so I could get out of here. So I got to go out and I went shopping first and filled the trunk with food. And we brought it to our friends who are collecting food for people north of the town of Arecibo, Angel Vasquez, who runs Arecibo. So we went there and we dropped off a repeater for them. And then we went off to the Quahataca Dam where one of our guys was to get them a better... we all got HTs, 5 watts, and Red Cross equipment guy found a bunch of mobiles with mag mounts so they could get 50 watts. So we went delivering radios to certain critical hams so they could ping the repeaters locally. And it was pretty interesting. Luckily, I downloaded offline maps at the airport before we went down to Puerto Rico because it came in handy. We were trying to find this dam in the dark. And we're driving along, and all of a sudden, the roads are just gone. I mean, there's so many mudslides that happen there. When you go into the mountainous areas, half the roads were gone. You just drive, and then there's no road. And so you have to turn around and figure out a way to get in there. And we found our way there in the dark, thank God for offline maps. So, but that was pretty interesting going out and seeing the people standing in line to try and get water from the water trucks. And, you know, just the total... The total devastation, you know, it was like a EF4 tornado took out the whole island. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that must have been something to witness that. And I imagine you got to make contact with some of the local amateur radio operators there on the island. I wonder if by chance you may have run across a fellow. We just did his kind of spontaneous cafe cast on Sunday, Milton WP3MH. He's a correctional officer there, and I think one of the prisons. Do you by chance remember running across him?
No, I did not. We went and we delivered a radio to Juan Sepulveda, who is part of Ares there on the island, and he lives just north of Lares in the Espinos Barrio, so we got to see him. But a lot of the local hams there, hats off to them, because we couldn't use the local repeaters while we were there for our emergency because they were working in conjunction with the power company to help provide communications to balance the loads as they started to bring power up. So those guys who were all impacted by the hurricane themselves and were scrambling for food, water, and gas are on that repeater constantly helping the power company bring the power back up. So my kudos to those guys. They worked tirelessly they did a great job.
Well, Milton tells us that the island is about 95%, I think it's what he said, back to normal again, although I'm sure there are many scars on the island as a result of the damage. You can't replace trees and things. But it was quite an operation, and we're proud of you and your efforts to help out with that, and I'm sure it was a real honor for you. I see that your station, that your home station there, is pretty impressive. My goodness. Is that yours or is that your husband's? That's quite a station. It looks very luxurious.
Definitely my husband's. I had that stupid loop Skywire mine, and I eventually saved up and bought a used tri-bander for $100. Yeah, but that my old station was enough to get me 250 countries before I lucked into this massive antenna farm. Yeah, we got 11 towers. I don't know. I can't even count how many antennas. One of our our vertical for 80 and 160 has over 30,000 feet of ground radials buried. It's just massive. it was definitely a learning curve when I came down because, you know, when you get on 20 meters, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 antennas to choose from. And he's got a beaming in all directions. And when you're contesting, it's a learning curve. But it's pretty wild to go from taking, you know, a while to get through a pileup to if I don't get through on the second try, I look to make sure everything's working properly because there's some reason I'm not getting through on the second try.
Well, yeah, I see you sitting on the beam of an 80-meter rotatable dipole. Holy, I think that's you. It's got your call sign on the picture up there in the clouds. How high off the ground are you there? And it looks a little chilly.
Well, it was an overcast day, and the picture is very deceiving. I'm only about 10 feet off the ground, hence I'm not hooked on. You know, I don't have a harness on or anything. I'm just sitting up there. But the sky was real overcast. We live in Flatland, Illinois. Everything's completely flat. So it looks like I'm way up there, but I'm really only 10 feet off the ground. But yeah, that's a custom-made 80-meter rotatable dipole, and it's like 5 3/4 inches thick at the center. And it's that low for testing, but we have so much wind here and so much ice, it's never been up. So I don't know what he's going to do with that thing. It's still kind of hanging out there so you can mow under it. It's high enough, but yeah, it's never really been used.
I'm disappointed. Only 10 feet. Well, people have been killed falling from less than 10 feet before, so that was pretty brave of you. Anyway, very interesting information you've got on your QRZ page. A lot of people know you, obviously, from your involvement with Ham Nation. And just being involved in that is quite a thrill in itself, although it's work. And I know you have to prepare a lot of stories and things for that. That's not always as exciting as you might think. A lot of us look at the celebs in amateur radio and think, oh, what a fun life they have. But it's a lot of work preparing for those things. And we thank you for your efforts, too. But tell us how it is you got involved with Ham Nation and how that has enhanced your life.
Well, I was getting ready to go to SABA, PJ6, to do a contest. And I was, at this time, the pilot for Amsterdam Island, FT5ZM. So people were asking me questions about Amsterdam Island and things like that. So I'm answering those questions, and people were talking about the contest. I was talking about when I was going to be contesting from SABA. So when they were at the end of every show, the hosts get a copy of the entire chat room. So if they can't, a lot of times it's hard to read that chat room while you're on the air. And they were reading through, and they said, well, this NV9L person is really active in DXing and contesting. That's really a hole in our program. We could probably use somebody to fill that gap. And so then they asked me to join. And I'm glad I did, because, like I said, when I started off in DXing and contesting, man, I didn't even know what any of that was about. You know, I made some real boner moves because I didn't know better. I didn't have an Elmer. I think a lot of times when these guys you know, belong to the 2 meter clubs, and then they get out on HF, they don't go to the 2 meter clubs anymore. And so that's why it's hard to find an Elmer to help you on HF. And so I kind of felt that, you know what, I'd like to do that so that some poor soul doesn't have to go through what I went through, learning the hard way how to contest in DX. So that's how I got involved. And I'm glad, yeah, you're right, it's a lot of work, but you know, we all love this hobby, so it really doesn't feel like work, you know. So I was very fortunate to be asked to be on.
And you run the chat room quite a bit then on Ham Nation every Wednesday night, huh?
No, Amanda usually runs the chat room. Every now and then I'll pick up if she can't be on there, because she does a lot of public service with the forest fires out there. So sometimes I'll pick it up, but that's her job, and she does great at it.
Okay, well, I'm surprised to know that you're on Zello, because it seems like a lot of amateur radio operators are kind of averse to some of this VoIP technology. We've chosen to embrace it here in the cafe. It's kind of our main platform. In fact, we did a poll recently on Facebook to see which one of our linked platforms or modes is the most popular, and we've got All-Star, DMR, D-Star, Fusion, Hamshack Hotline, Peanut, Zello, and TeamSpeak all connected together. And Zello was way out in the lead, which is very surprising. How did you first get into the Zello side of things? And what are your thoughts about VoIP technology related to amateur radio? Is it real radio?
Well, I think it's real radio. It's not amateur radio, but it's real radio. And I got involved during Hurricane Harvey. I was on Zello and helping to dispatch for people to go rescue dogs and cats and horses. And so, you know, because with Hurricane Harvey, they didn't lose their cell towers. There was mostly just flooding. So it came in very handy. I know a lot of the Cajun Navy and things like that, they use this app as well. So it comes into effect a lot for MCOM, so to speak, you know, when you don't lose your cell service. And you know, if you do, then you need to go with amateur radio. But this is a great tool.
Yeah, we agree. There's a lot of us here that prefer Zello over just about anything else, although there are many other great VoIP applications. The International Radio Network, IRN, part of the guild, they use TeamSpeak, which is very similar. You can create channels and you can link them to actual RF, like repeaters or simplex nodes or whatever. We've also got Peanut app created by David, PA7LIM out there in the Netherlands. That's another great platform, and they're bridging that to D-Star and now DMR. There's just so many cool tools out there to enhance our communications, and we agree with you. It is radio. It may not be amateur radio directly, although some of these digital technologies, like even Wi-Fi, is in the amateur radio spectrum. And so if you've got a mesh network on some of those channels, that's actually amateur radio. So there's a lot of cool technology, and it's so good to have you join us in the cafe and tell your story and talk about all the things that you've been doing. What would be probably the one thing that you're most passionate about in the hobby?
I can't call it one thing. I mean, there's so many things to this hobby. That's what makes this hobby great. You know, I'm loving FT8 right now, really. I'm going for my challenge, so I'm really filling in on a lot of band slots. So I do like to DX. I love contesting. We just finished the June VHF contest, but and it's just such a wonderful hobby, and you have lifelong friends all over the world. You can't really say that about a lot of hobbies. So and I'm passionate about exploring all new things I've never tried. We're gonna try to do some EME this summer. Yeah, I can't nail down one thing. There's so many things. That's what makes this great.
Anyway, I know one of your passions too is Elmering and helping and assisting new hams, particularly young people. Is there something you're specifically doing to help bring in the younger generation?
Not right now, but it is on the to-do list. Believe me, I really want to get more involved. I kind of live in the middle of nowhere, so it's difficult. But I want to come up with a way to get more kids involved, and I think contesting is the way to go, but not contesting like you and I know. I'm trying to think of ways to make a contest more like a video game. You know, you have to work so many European countries before Africa opens up and you can start working at, you know, and kind of make it like a video game instead of like work as many people as you can in a certain amount of time. So that's kind of on my list right now, is to try and come up with ways to improve, you know, it'd be a contest in a contest, but to try and get the kids in because they love their video games. And if we can make contesting a little more video game like, and another way too is like you said, with bridging the gap with all of these like Zello apps and things like that, bridging the gap between that and ham radio is another way to attract them.
I think what brings young people into the hobby, as you said, is bringing them the experience of the hobby with something they already have. And that's what we always mention around here, is we want to reach the young people with the thing they all have in common, and that's their smartphone. Well, anyway, we've got several people out here in the channel. I don't know if anyone has any other questions, but let's just throw it open real quick. Anybody out there want to jump in? Maybe just leave a comment or ask a question to Val. Go ahead.
Okay, let's see if I can crack the pile up. Hey, Val, good afternoon to you. Eddie here in Southern California. Missed you this past year up at the International DX Convention. My wife and I usually show up, and this year we took a hiatus from it, but good hearing you on Digicom Cafe, no doubt about that. My regards, and send it back to you. NV9L, Kilo Quebec 6 Kilo. Like I said, Eddie, located in Southern California.
Hey, Eddie, Kilo Quebec 6 Kilo. Yeah, it's we love going to that DX convention. It's a really good time to get away from Illinois weather. Yeah, we're hoping maybe this next year we'll be up there next April. But yeah, it'd be nice to get up there again. That's a great DX convention, and I love the locale. And nice to have you in the chat room here.
All right, appreciate it. Good to hear you, and good luck. KQ6K.
Anyway, I know you're busy and you're trying to get stuff together for tomorrow night's Ham Nation program, which, by the way, for those that are listening, you can get that on your Roku box connected to your big screen TV by going to twit.tv or the Twit application on the Roku, We listen to it and watch it frequently on Wednesday nights. It's actually more enjoyable because it's live with all the intros and the redos, and it's really entertaining, quite funny to watch the guys. And obviously the podcast is edited down a bit, but that's quite an experience you have there. And I think you all use Skype for that. What is your thoughts on the experience of having a multi-site live broadcast, and how much work is really involved in preparing for that?
Well, for the most part, on average, for every 10 minutes, our segments are 10 minutes, it takes about 10 hours of work to put it 10 minutes on the air. So it's a lot of work. Luckily, I'm just working part-time, so I can do that. And yeah, if you guys want to tune in tomorrow night, I'm going to be doing it's kind of boring, but it's something that you might find interesting, and it's how to make your club a 501c7. And so you can be a nonprofit, or say you were a nonprofit and treasures changed hands and you lost your certification, how to go about getting that reinstated. So it's really kind of boring IRS paperwork and things like that, but it's something that could be beneficial to your club.
Well, great. We will be watching. And thank you for all that you do to enhance and build our hobby. You have a very exciting life and are obviously very passionate about amateur radio. And we are too. That's why we do these cafe casts and have the Digicom Cafe. It's just our way of providing a very safe and welcoming platform for everybody, radio or no radio, young or old. And the Cafe Cast is designed to build our hobby one story at a time. And I want to thank you for being one of those stories, Val.
Well, thank you so much, Denny. And thanks to everybody who's listening. And hopefully you guys enjoy the hobby as much as I do.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe Cast. Visit our website at digicomcafe.com to see our extensive digital buffet menu and listen to all of the live conversations on our Cafe on Ice stream. Or this and many more episodes of our Cafe Cast.